Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. With me, Alistair Beckett King.
And me, James Shakeshaft.
And James Shakeshaft. Mm. Hello.
Hello.
And James, I've got a tale for you today that hails from the Kentish city of Canterbury.
Have you double-checked that that's in Kent? I've been burned before.
It is in Kent. We will not make that mistake twice.
I probably will. What's the tale?
Well, James, I have got... I don't want to overstate it, but I think thrill ride is the phrase I would use. I've got a thrill ride for you that I like to call the Enigma of the Panelled Room.
I am intrigued.
Hello, is that James Shakeshaft?
Yes, speaking.
Alistair Beckett King here. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear from you too.
James.
Yeah.
James.
Yeah.
I have got a roller coaster of a tale for you today.
Excellent.
You must be this tall to ride this tale.
Wow.
And you are.
Yeah, fortunately.
Easily exceed the height limit for the tale.
Have I got the correct armband?
Yes, you do. Welcome aboard.
Thank goodness.
I'm going to just lower that thing down onto it. It seems a little bit wobbly, but don't worry about that.
Yeah, don't wobble it too hard.
James, you must have been at the age of about six tall enough to go on all of those rides, surely.
Yeah, I think so.
Must have been the envy of the class.
If I'd have had any friends back then, I'm sure.
Well, now we know why you were so unpopular.
Oh, because of the jealousy.
They envied your ability to just walk up to the guy running the ride and say, "You knock off, mate, I'll run this." And he just assumes you work there.
As a tall six-year-old, yes.
As a very, very tall six-year-old. I would like to tell you about the Enigma of the Panelled Room.
Ooh.
I was waving my hands around while I said that. I don't know if it came across.
I think there was, yeah, got a general vibe of it, yeah.
Thank you. Come with me, James, to Canterbury.
Oh, yeah.
A very ancient city on the River Stour. I went there recently.
Oh, I've been to Canterbury.
Why did you go there?
Well, I'm just trying to amuse myself in Kent. It is in Kent.
It is one of the high points of Kent, I think we can agree. It's got the cathedral, which you can't see. You have to pay to get in to see the cathedral.
Oh.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, you can't even walk around it for free. Incredible.
I went on the Canterbury Tales experience.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I think it's one of them, don't look for it, it's not there anymore.
Oh, is it? They put you on a donkey and tell you rude jokes for 4 days.
Yes.
Well, Canterbury's been around for a while, as I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. It was called Duravernum by the Romans. And in Canterbury, as I discovered recently, you can go underground and you can see wibbly-wobbly mosaics beneath the modern streets.
Oh, can you?
Yeah. I don't think the ground was wobbly in those days. I think when the Romans did it, it was flat. But now it looks like a Roman skate park.
Oh, sweet.
Mm.
Gnarly. Gnarlium.
And I saw in one of the mosaics on the floor, there were three of them, and the third one had had a heart, like a love heart symbol on it, which I didn't realise was that old a symbol.
No, me neither.
And I like to think that that one represented love and that the other two were living and laughing. Maybe.
Yeah, I bet they did.
So we're in Canterbury, as I was just recently. Come with me, James, to a number 34 St. Margaret Street, which is mostly a 17th century building with loads of later additions. Now you would know it as Tiny Tim's Tea Rooms.
The Triple T.
the Triple, and it is the place to go for tea. They've got an incredible range. The name is irritatingly quaint. But they have a really wide range of teas and coffees and a good range of vegan-friendly cakes.
Oh, nice one, Tiny Tim.
I don't want to set up a rivalry twixt Tim and Meg's, but as tea rooms go, I know which way I'm leaning. And we were just about to leave when we discovered that the tea rooms has, on the very top floor, a ghost room.
Oh.
I had very low expectations.
How did you know?
There was a little note saying, "Come and see our ghost room."
Oh, very friendly.
What would you do in that situation?
Like a rat up a drainpipe. Like a ghost hunting rat.
Yeah, absolutely. Like a six-year-old James on a roller coaster. Shoot straight up there.
Yep.
The panelled room on the top floor is the ghost room. You go up a squared spiral staircase to a very small room with a large brick fireplace, panelled wooden walls all round, and very, very wonky floors.
Roman floors, then.
Yes, exactly like the Roman floors. Basically, Canterbury has gone wibbly. At some point
it's been bewibbled.
Between Roman times and now, it wibbled. And the buildings are just having to deal with the fallout.
Mm.
I can say that because my flat has really wonky floors, but nowhere near as wonky as the floors in this room.
You wouldn't want to play marbles.
You joking, James? You joking? You'd struggle to tiddlywink, honestly.
Not even tiddle one wink.
You couldn't tiddle a wink in a room like that.
Oosh.
There's little wooden hatches around the fireplace, and there's a narrow door, and we open the door. Behind the door, a plastic skeleton. So, yeah, it was a low-grade Halloween product, but it had its effect.
Mm.
I entered into the spirit of things.
Yeah.
The mood was set. And in the panelled room, we discovered the legend of the panelled room as told on information fact sheets by a local Canterbury legend named John Hippersley.
A Canterbury legend?
Well, he himself is a Canterbury legend. He is both a tour guy.
Nice.
A ghost tour guy. And the author of Haunted Canterbury from History Press's Haunted series.
You
know, the one that has the chiller font.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The classic 90s, the only scary font in your font deck. Chiller.
Mm-hmm.
He runs ghost tours of the city at thecanterburytours.com.
Mm.
And in information fact sheets there, he tells the story of 34 St. Margaret's, also known as the Jeffrey House. So it starts with a character called Sir Jeffrey Newman.
They got a new man.
Brand new. Apparently, according to the cathedral archives, Sir Jeffrey Newman, the baronet, made a lot of money through piracy in a ship called Le Royal.
Oh.
Which is French for...
I'm guessing the Royal?
The Big Mac, correct. Just a little joke there.
Nice.
He was a very successful pirate until he raided a French ship called Lion d'Argent, the Silver Lion, and tried to sell his booty at the port of Bilbao in Spain.
Mm.
Only to find out, James, that the stuff he had just stolen had itself already been stolen from Bilbao.
Oh, no. And
you'd think that they would be thrilled, and he'd be like, I was bringing it back. But apparently they were not that pleased. Hippersley says that he was arrested, tortured, and while awaiting trial, he was brought before the council general of the town and given a choice.
Mm.
Quote, having his internal organs pulled out of his mouth and burned before him before being cut into four pieces and roasted over a fire, after which he would then be fed to the castle ravens, or banishment and a heavy fine.
Okay.
Naturally, he chose the latter.
Mm.
What would James do?
Was it pulled out of my mouth?
I believe it was the mouth, yes.
I can't even work out how they do that. And I wouldn't want to find out.
I'm not sure it's possible, but let's not put limits on the human imagination.
Mm.
Hippersley then says that he returned to England to his waiting wife after 16 years, overjoyed at the 12 healthy children his wife had borne in his absence. I think, Monsieur Hippersley, you have the little joke with us.
Mm?
He had 12 kids to look after, a massive family, so he needed a bigger house. And a god came to him in a dream and told him to approach the Dean of Canterbury, who leased him the ground on which now stands 34 St. Margaret's for 999 years at the cost of one groat a year, which over 1,000 years, that's quite a lot of groats.
Mm.
He probably would have wanted to put in some kind of interest or...
Yeah.
They seem not to have done that.
Ah.
But there was one little hitch to this sweet, sweet deal.
Yeah.
The property would revert to the church if any Newman father outlived his only son.
Right. Okay.
Apparently. So over the years, his big house was split up into four properties, one of which is now 34 St. Margaret's, a.k.a. Triple T.
Triple T.
And the houses stayed in the Newman family until the 20th century. The lease, in fact, was not breached until the Second World War II.
Right.
We've heard of it.
Yep.
When the newest Newman was killed in a bombing raid, meaning that, you know, they breached the lease. But the lease had been all but forgotten by that time.
Mm.
According to Hippersley, the last of the Newman line lived until 1957. He was outlived by his wife by a further 12 years, after which the widow sold all four properties to the Dean and Chapter for an alleged £4.9 million.
Whoa.
So their church bought their own house back, James.
Yikes, they should have gone with the Bilbao bargaining technique.
It was only after that sale that the original lease was uncovered by an archivist in the cathedral. But by then it was too late. But hey, what's £4.9 million in the 70s?
A piffle.
It's nothing compared to your own good health, is it?
Mm.
Or the laugh on a smiling six-year-old James on a roller coaster.
Yes.
So everything was grand until... the fire.
Oh.
In the 60s, the property became a Chinese restaurant.
Mm.
And according to the information fact sheet, it was called the Lok Yin, which is Mandarin for good luck.
Nice.
Although I asked Google Translate and it said it was Mandarin for catering. So you decide.
Okay. I think someone's being led a merry dance.
Well, maybe, maybe. Don't leap to judgment, James.
Mm-hmm.
I ask you to suspend judgment until I have laid the facts of the case before you.
Okay.
In the mid-80s, disaster struck. According to Hibbersley, in 1986, the owner of the Chinese restaurant had fallen afoul of triad loan sharks.
Ooh.
It can happen to anyone.
I guess.
Somehow a fire started and the property was gutted. Hippisley notes, ironically, the remains of a Chinese man were found in the very place where the fire alarm now stands.
It's
like, probably not that hilarious from his point of view.
Yeah, not many people's point of view, I don't think.
No, no. But you're aware, I'm sure, of the trend in the 60s and 70s in Britain of covering up sort of Victorian details and intricate mouldings and fireplaces with flat, featureless walls. Are you aware of that, James?
Yes, yeah.
Well, exactly that had happened to the interior of 34 St. Margaret's over the years. But the fire burned away the stud walls, revealing those beautiful fireplaces that I saw when I was at the tea rooms and revealing the panelled walls of the ghost room that nobody knew about. Mm.
To be honest, I was a little worried you were going to say you're aware of the fad in the 70s of covering up fire alarms with charred corpses.
It was a different time, James.
It was
a different time. We can't judge them by our standards.
Mm.
The Canterbury Archaeological Trust's yearly report from the year 1985 to 1986, I'm sure I don't have to tell you, James, always on the bedside table, I should imagine.
Definitely. I mean, it's one of them ones where it's if it's out of the library, it's probably because I've got it, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. It's only Shakeshaft with the old Canterbury Archaeological Trust yearly report. 1985 to 6? Of course, 1985 to 6.
You betcha.
That report describes it as a curious 17th century building, noting that behind its bland 19th century facade, the original frame remains virtually intact, including some of the best details observed to date for a building of this period. A small, panelled chamber at the rear of the second floor only just fortunately escaped the onslaught of the flames.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ghost room, you can see pictures of the panelling sort of half burned away and the hollowed out shell of the building with the staircase completely destroyed. Now, according to Hippersley, in the panelled room that you now stand in, behind the panels were found... I don't know if he sounds like this, by the way. I'm just guessing.
No.
Behind the panels were found inscriptions for the children of the family that had lived and died for many generations. There were, in total, 186 pieces of linen fold panelling, and behind each one had been placed a child's tooth.
Oh.
Sometimes covered in silver.
Oh.
A ringlet of child's hair, and the name, date of birth, and date of death for each.
Oh.
The loose bricks in the fireplace revealed bags of salt in Hessian and a collection of children's shoes, all from around the 16th century.
Well, I mean, it's weird and macabre, but related. I don't understand the addition of the salt.
I'm not sure why the salt's there. Well, maybe just to, I don't know, to preserve it with the bags of salt.
I'm guessing it's rock salt as well, rather than fine table salt if it's in Hessian.
It'd be spilling everywhere, wouldn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
But it gets stranger still, James. Did you think that was as strange as it was going to get?
I thought it was pretty strange.
Well, it's going to get stranger still.
Whoa.
According to Hippersley, the bodies of three mummified children were found in the attic.
What?
Wrapped in shrouds that were stitched through the nose in the nautical style.
Didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
That's a fun little fact, but...
Just a fun little fact. Are you aware of the nautical style? The jaunty nautical style of shroud stitching?
Through the nose? Why, of course.
No, thank you. I'm not a sailor. Apparently sailors would be stitched up in their hammocks. That much seems to definitely be true if they died, not if they didn't
right.
die, except maybe as a joke.
Mm.
And the saying goes, or the legend is, that the last stitch would go through the nose to check if you were really, truly dead.
Ah...
From my point of view, as someone who hasn't got a lot of time to waste stitching people up in hammocks who are alive, check first.
Yes.
I'm not going to stitch the whole hammock, stick it through your nose, and you go, oh, my nose! And they go, right, great, well, I'll just have to unstitch you now.
Yes, yeah, start with the nose.
Start with the nose. Just poke, just check.
Just ask.
Victorians were just nuts about people being mistaken for if they were dead. Just check. Just really check.
Ask nicely.
Now, the blog British Tars, which is about sailors and general nautical stuff, has a blog post about this supposed practice, which was believed by sailors to have been done since, friend of the show, the Time Memorial.
Ah, the Time Memorial. Nice.
Since Time Memorial. According to that blog, the earliest reference to this in the literature that can be found is in 1831.
Oh, that's...
As a thing that people used to do. So maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen. I don't know. But still, it's kind of cool, through the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Cool little side fact.
Definitely.
After the fire, the council took over the reconstruction of the panelled room and of the squared spiral staircase, which had been revealed by the fire, or rather the remains of which had been revealed by the fire. And that was the very same squared spiral staircase that I ascended myself.
Oh.
As a patron. They rebuilt it in the way it had been before.
Mm.
But the house did not rest easy, James. Late at night, workmen in the building, and I don't want to stereotype, but I presume they were doughty, level-headed fellows, not given to imagination, they began to hear sounds, whispering and singing and the laughter as if of a child.
What?
Strange drops in temperature and a sense that something was wrong.
Mm.
Now, this is where things get fuzzy, James. According to John Hippersley's information fact sheets, the cause of the children's death could not be established, but they were dated to 1503. Thanks to the Bibles clasped in their hands.
Right.
That's what John Hippersley wrote. But, according to bitter rival John Hippersley in Haunted Canterbury, the four mummies, sorry, did you think there were three mummies there?
Yeah, I did.
Well, it's four mummies now. You were wrong by a quarter.
Oh.
Or a third? I'm not sure. There were four now.
I was a full mummy out.
Catch up, you're out by an entire mummy. The four mummies died of cholera, clutching not Bibles, but handwritten parchments of the fifth psalm. And they were carbon dated to within 10 years of 1415.
To 1425?
Could be. Or 1405.
Oh, yeah, either way.
Either way, James. So, okay, fair enough. That's a minor discrepancy.
Yeah.
Now, being a ghost tour guy is not an exact science.
No.
Wait, James. Whoa, hold there. Whoa. Did you think he was just a tour guy?
Yes.
No, and author. No. He's a ghost hunter.
Oh. Doing it on the side.
He's got a side hustle. Everyone has to these days.
Yes.
Portfolio careers.
Is he disrupting the ghost hunting thing?
He does seem like he would be disruptive based on the information I've gathered.
The top hat.
Yeah, I think he's cocking a snook, or possibly a snoop, towards your more boring historical walking tours.
How so?
With his top ass, but also with his sort of slightly jokey tone. You know, he popped in a couple of gags there, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. Haunted Canterbury recounts how in Year of Our Lord 1991, Hippersley and his fellow researcher, a defrocked Catholic priest, which is the most dangerous kind of priest.
Naked?
Yeah, that's the second stage in a boss fight with a Catholic priest. And then after that, they turn into a giant snake. Hippersley and his defrocked friend spent a night in 34 St. Margaret's getting into what I would describe as Abbott and Costello-esque hijinks.
Yeah.
While zipped into his sleeping bag, Hippersley heard a nursery rhyme.
Do you always zip the nose last as well?
In the nautical fashion.
Yes.
He starts to hear very faintly what seems to be a tune sung by children. And I'm reading now. All me candles, breda brichte, candle lichter for all nichter. And he says, at the time, I did not understand the language, but have since discovered it was a traditional medieval song sung over children dying of plague or ague. Those children that see this light by their bed will not in the morning, for they will be with the Lord.
Oh.
Although dead would have rhymed.
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not an expert on older forms of the English language. I don't think it says that. Just not enough words in it. It's way too short.
Yeah.
All me candles brennen brichter. All my candles burn brighter. Candle lichter must be lighter. I just don't think it says that.
Yeah.
Anyway. Still, that's pretty spooky to hear that. But that was not the end. He was woken, assaulted seemingly by the ghost, and tried to run away from the ghost while zipped up in his sleeping bag, banged into the door, nearly fell down the stairs, and found his friend almost being throttled to death with his own rosary beads by unseen hands.
Oh, no.
Pretty intense. Next morning, a door on the top floor had been torn from its hinges, and blood was dripping down the walls.
Blimey. I think the priest should have got rid of the jewellery as well as the frock.
Yeah, you can't keep the rosary beads. Maybe it was just the Catholic Church turning up to be like, you're not allowed those, mate. Yeah, you chance.
Give them here.
Still, that is the story of the panelled room. James, Are you ready for scores?
Yes.
Well, I'm not.
Oh.
Yeah. Record scratch. Brakes squealing.
Squeak.
Old-fashioned car horn. Genre shift. James, I need a genre shift in here right now.
Oh.
This is no longer a folklore podcast, James. This is now a true crime expose podcast. And the crime is telling porkies. And the suspect is none other than local legend John Hippersley.
Oh, no.
Who is a real living man, and I will do my best not to slander.
Right.
When I hear a story for the podcast, as I'm sure you do, I like to do a bit of reading around it. So look for other sources, like find out about the stitch through the nose, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I like to, you know, flesh out the story. I like to corroborate the sources.
Yeah.
And I did that with the legend of the panelled room.
Sure.
Oh, boy.
What?
Oh, mama.
What?
Let's start small. Some of Hippersley's dates are a bit off.
Right.
So what? Yeah. I think the fire happened in 1984, not 1986.
Okay.
But just as he says, there was a Chinese restaurant called Lok Yin in Canterbury, spelt slightly differently to how he spelled it, but still.
Mm-hmm.
Crucially, not on St. Margaret's Street.
Oh.
According to a 1977 edition of In Cant, I don't need to tell you, the Canterbury student newspaper.
Yes.
The Lok Yin was on St. Peter's Street. There was a Chinese restaurant on St. Margaret's at 34 St. Margaret's, and that was the Hop Quang, sister restaurant of the Hop Quang in Folkestone.
Oh.
Which stayed open for many years and finally closed in 2020 due to COVID. Now, the Hop Quang in Folkestone was loved by locals for its time warp 1970s vibes and its booths, and it was criticised by the health inspector for storing food in open containers on the floor. So. Oh.
It was a different time.
Swings and roundabouts, really. It was a different. Well, I mean, it was the 20s. I think it was the 90s when that happened. But it was as if it was a different time.
Mm.
It was the 70s.
Mm.
Now, the Hop Quang in Canterbury burned down in 1984, according to the Kent Historic Environment record. Now, I can't find any news reports about this. So it happened, but I can't tell you much about it. I can't find, and this is going to startle you, James. I can't find any evidence that the triads were operating in 1980s Canterbury.
Okay, then.
That's going to startle and shake your worldview.
Does a little.
But does that prove that they weren't?
No, absolutely not.
No. Maybe they were just too good at their jobs.
They're going to cover the tracks.
Of course they are. We're not dealing with amateurs here. It's the triads.
Mm.
It's like when Colin Powell showed those aerial photographs of Iraq that didn't have anything in them.
Yeah.
Being like, look how well they're hiding the weapons.
Very good at hiding things.
Whoa, these factories are so well hidden. So the place could be full of triads. I can't find any news articles saying that anybody died in the fire, but I can't find any news articles about the fire, so I can't really prove anything one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
The best account we have comes from your friend and mine, the Canterbury Archaeological Trust, who were just thrilled, just absolutely ecstatic, bouncing off what remains of the walls about the history that the fire had revealed.
Oh, so that bit's true.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Clive Bowley, City Council Conservation Office. Look sharp, fellas. It's Bowley. I don't know anything about this guy. I just love the other, like, who do you work for, Bowley? The City Council Conservation Office. I have authority here. Step aside. What's behind that panel? The tooth?
180 teeth.
That's quite a lot of teeth. In the 1986 to 1987 report, a year after the one we were talking about before, not as good as the previous year, but still a fine report.
The difficult second report.
He wrote ecstatically, further investigation has revealed a total of 4 fine stuccoed brick fireplaces. The mouldings of the first floor fireplace with fleur-de-lis motifs to the jambs, and one surviving decorative spandrel panel with traces of bucranium moulding out of special interest.
What's bucranium?
Bucranium. You heard me. You're dealing with Bowley now, James. He knows bucranium when he sees it.
Sounds like something out of Marvel.
It does. I think it's just a kind of relief moulding. Even more remarkable was the discovery of sufficient evidence to enable the reconstruction of the design of the original staircase that had been completely removed.
Mm.
So that you can see how excited Bowley is. And he's not a man who flies off the handle.
No. You've got to have a level head to work on the old, what was it?
City Council Conservation Office.
CCCO.
Otherwise they wouldn't let you carry a weapon.
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very weirdly, James, like bizarrely weirdly, they don't mention at any point ringlets of hair or teeth covered in silver or 3 to 4 mummified bodies. So distracted were they by the bucranium moulding and the spandrel panels
Spandrels.
So swept up in the spandy-pandies that they just skipped over, presumably, multiple dead bodies. Oh, and I didn't mention mummified cats and dogs as well.
Right. It's sorted.
Seems like an odd oversight. You'd think archaeologists would be interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not the strangest thing about the bodies. Remember, the bodies dated from either 1503 or 1415.
Yeah.
As I've told you, I think twice now, the building is a 17th century building.
Ah.
That's how the Archaeological Trust describe it, meaning that the bodies were found in the attic of a building that wasn't constructed until 1 to 2 centuries after they died. The timeline makes no sense, James.
Maybe just sort of floating there, and they thought, we need to cover this up.
Just waiting for an attic to arrive.
Pop a building over them.
That's where they're getting very wet up there. Put a little salt in. A little salt to absorb the moisture.
Mm.
What about Sir Geoffrey Newman, James, the baronet pirate?
Yeah.
Yeah, can't find a lot of stuff about him. Can't find any record of a baronet Geoffrey Newman or his vessel, Le Royal. As far as I can tell, there's only ever been one baronet called Sir Geoffrey Newman, and he's alive now. So, probably not him.
No.
There was a famous 17th...
Stick a needle through his nose just to check.
We should check, although he's a living person you're saying that about, so let's watch it.
Well, as far as we know.
As far as we know, he's a living person. There was a famous 17th century Cantuarian called Sir George Newman. And he's immortalised in statue form in the nearby St. Margaret's Church. But James, he was the opposite of a pirate.
Right. He had three legs.
He had loads of eyes, massive number of legs.
He lived on a parrot's shoulder.
He was responsible for sentencing pirates because he was a judge of the cinq ports.
Right.
As in, un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq.
Right. Not underwater.
That's the last thing you'd want in a harbour.
That's the opposite of a dry dock, I guess.
Yep. Un, deux, trois, quatre, oh, cinq.
Oh, la la.
As if an unsuccessful launch at a French port there.
Yes.
I'm sure you're aware of which Kent ports make up the cinq ports, but do you want to have a go?
Dover?
Yes. Straight out of the gate with Dover.
Sheppey?
Nope.
That's an island.
I'll give you a clue. They're on the mainland, these ports.
What?
Yeah.
Margate. So,
discount? No, not quite.
Whitstable.
Is that a port town?
Don't know.
Try and say things that are on the coast. Where did the Battle of Hastings take place?
Battle?
Well, no, it was Hastings in this case.
Ah.
Sorry, to be fair, you are right with your answer, but you are wrong about the ports. Fair enough, I did say Kent. Hastings is not in Kent.
Yeah, come on. If anyone knows that right now, it's me.
Yep, fair enough. I accept full responsibility there. The cinq ports originally were Hastings, New Romney.
There's a New Romney.
Hythe. Yeah, it is to Old Romney as Coke is to New Coke. Everyone hates New Romney. Hythe, Dover, of course, and Sandwich.
Of course, Sandwich.
Now, do Americans know that Sandwich is a place?
Don't know. Let's not tell them.
Yeah, well, you just found out if you're an American and you didn't know.
Do they know that ham's a place as well?
There should be a train line joining them, the ham sandwich line.
Yes, definitely. Is there a town called Demi Baguette?
If you don't know where Sandwich is, it's between Margate and Deal. If you want to imagine a geography sandwich. That would be a sandwich sandwich. So we're doing quite poorly so far. Do you remember how the property was allegedly sold for £4.9 million in the late 60s or early 70s?
Yeah.
It seemed like a lot of money, didn't it?
Yeah.
I just decided to try and find out how much money that is. That's roughly the equivalent of £64 million now.
Jai, jai, jai.
For four houses.
That seems too much.
That's too much. It is. I looked at the rough valuations of properties on that street. You could probably buy those properties now for less than 5 million quid, unsurprisingly.
The lot.
Yeah.
Job lot.
Yeah, because they're less than £1 million each. The numbers make no sense, James. The timeline makes no sense.
It's like a Pulp Fiction by your friend, not our friend, Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah.
It is like the Pulp Fictions from Quentin Tarantino. John Hippersley, you have brought the fine tradition of the information fact sheet into disrepute.
Was it laminated?
It was not laminated. It was framed and behind glass.
But isn't, like, framing a picture old school laminating.
Yeah, it's the lamination of the 19th century.
In a way.
Great point, James.
Yeah, thanks.
I thought I'd found a smoking gun.
Go on. Was it a boiling kettle?
I thought I had Hippisley nailed to the wall, very much like those picture frames. But I'm not sure now. I don't know that they were nailed. In 2009, he told the Kent on Sunday newspaper, I saw my first ghost at 13, but did not begin actual phantom sleuthing until 1995. How can that be, James? When his very book describes an incredibly unconvincing ghost hunt occurring in 1991.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah,
what is that I smell from the end of the gun? Is it smoke?
It's some smoke, yes.
On the other hand, I mean, maybe he was just misquoted in the paper. That isn't. I think he started doing ghost walks around about then. So
could be a typo.
So it could be a typo. So I don't know if I would really send him down just for that. I've been able to corroborate three facts from the information fact sheets, to be fair.
Go on.
It used to be a Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
There was a fire. And do you remember it said, in the panelled room that you stand in now?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, when I read that, James, I was standing in the panelled room.
Ooh, he's got you there. He has got you there.
How did you know, Hippisley? And that, James, that is the enigma of the panelled room.
What an enigma.
How did he know?
Probably stipulated on, it's probably on the back of the piece of paper that you can see saying, stick this up in the panelled room or else.
That's probably it.
Signed, Hippisley.
J. Hippisley. I don't know. I'm not saying it's fake. I don't have access to the cathedral archives. I'm not a defrocked priest. I am a fully clothed layperson. So it's not for me to say it's not true. That's for you to say, James.
Okay. Well, it is an enigma wrapped in a panelled room inside of Kent, as Churchill said.
Did he? Well, it was one of his lesser speeches.
Yeah. But it's very niche.
only the real fans know that one. Are you ready to score this bad boy? And the bad boy I'm referring to is John Hippisley.
Yeah, yes. From the sound of things, he has been a very naughty boy.
He may or may not.
Or has been misled.
Whoever told this story to him, I think, was leading him a merry dance.
I feel like my hands are full of stones, but I, Alistair, am in a glass house. A greenhouse. It's a greenhouse.
Yeah, I guess in a way, we also have maybe at some point passed off information that wasn't completely 100% accurate on this very podcast.
Chris Cantrell has appeared numerous times.
Let she who is not Ruth L. Tongue the first stone.
Yuck.
Are you tonguing a stone?
Turned out no. Turned out that wasn't a stone.
It's one of the best ways to find out if something's a stone, in my experience.
Yes, according to Robin Ince as well, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, a stone tonguer. Robin Ince, did you edit that bit out? Was that part of the Patreon-only bit?
I think so, but actually, it genuinely is a way to tell if something's a fossil or a stone, to put it on your tongue.
Oh, yeah. Because the tongue knows.
The tongue knows. It's like...
The tongue knows.
This may have been your on the internet about sensing wet laundry.
Oh, yeah. I think we've definitely had a conversation about that. It's got to be on the lips. The lips know.
The lips knows. The lips are the nose of the lips.
The lips are the only part of the body that can tell if it's wet.
Yes. It's like, that picture from science books. I think I said that before.
What are you thinking of, the sensory homunculus?
Yes.
Yeah, but they depict it missing with no willy. So it's not accurate.
It might be a lady homunculus.
Yeah, but it's not, because it also has none of the lady parts. There are rude / accurate versions of the homunculus out there, but you don't want to see them.
I think someone might have adapted the original the science books at my school.
In the school textbook, yeah.
But then I think they turned everything into a homunculus then.
Yep, a lot of homunculi around the place. So let's score this. My first category for you, James, is the category of names. Naming.
Right. Yes. Very good. Hippisley is a lovely name. It's fun to say.
It's a lovely name.
Hippisley, Hippelsley, if you just read it wrong.
Yeah. If you just say the letters in a different order, yep. Could be anything. We've got the judge of the Cinque Ports.
the judge of the cinq ports.
The cinq ports, the first Boy. Underwater ports. We've got Clive Bowley, City Council Conservation Office. Don't mess with him.
Clive Bowley, the very same.
We've got the Hop Quang versus the Lok Yin. Which do you prefer? They both went out of business years ago.
So I think it's a four. It's sturdy.
It's a sturdy old four, like the building itself. It can withstand a fire that guts the interior, but the frame survives. What about Le Royale? I've just remembered there's a ship called the Royale and the Lion d'Argent.
Way. And I was taking into account the fact that it's called the Tiny Tim Tea Rooms.
Tiny Tim's Tea Rooms. The Triple T.
It's the Triple T threat. Solid.
A respectable old four. I'll just laminate that.
Mm-hmm.
Next category. For this category, James, I invite you to imagine that the second half of this episode didn't happen.
Okay.
And I just described a whole load of spooky stuff and then went straight to the scores. So no record scratch, no car horn honk. Oh. Unhonk that horn, Sonny.
I'm imagining a calendar, but the days of getting put back on it as opposed to ripping off.
Back on, yeah. It's stapling, manually move the hands of the clock back and grade me on Supernatural.
Oh. Well, it is...
chilling.
There is that whole baby bit. The crying of the children is very scary.
The crying and singing.
No matter what they were singing, even if it was in abridged form, they were sort of singing in text speak.
Yeah, you up, mate.
Mate, in this context, is God.
Yeah, yeah.
See, the thing is, those builders, they weren't pre-17th century.
They were very much post-17th century, those builders.
Yeah, exactly. That may not be part of the fabric, the tissue of mistruths.
Beautiful turn of phrase there, James. Can I just stop the podcast to say, beautiful turn of phrase. The tissue of mistruths.
So, if you go with that having happened, and it's just the backstory... the origin story is, you know, inaccurate.
No smoke without fire. No fires without triads.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
It's quite scary then. And we still don't know. We have no explanation for these spooky little choir.
Yeah. And also when the ghost throttled that priest, do you think that happened, James?
Well, we can't say that it didn't.
Former priest.
Yeah, defrocked.
We certainly can't say that it didn't.
If anything, it's more scary for me now. I'm going to go with a four again.
A four?
Yeah.
I mean, that's very much the number I was expecting, a four. Hmm. Correct.
Just because all the stuff that's has been debunked by yourself is, that's not the ghosty bit. That's just the reason for the ghosty bit.
Yeah, it's definitely still ghosts. I mean, as reported by the same person who reported all the other stuff. But yeah, the builders think there's ghosts. And it definitely got rebuilt, so the builders must have been there.
That's why they won't work late at night.
When they were at work, as builders are famous for doing.
Late night builders.
Okay, I'll gladly take that for and slip that into the behind the glass of the information fact sheet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so let's rebunk all of that stuff that I debunked. We're unbunking again. So I want to go back to zero bunk.
Okay.
Next category.
Yes.
Telling tales.
Ooh.
Do you see what I've done there?
That's a mixture of bunk and debunk, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we're mid-bunk.
I can see sort of three major strands to this argument, right? So you've got the tale being told in its laminated format.
That is a tale told, and very well, I have to say, by John Hippersley.
The telling tales, it's like a tall tale. That kind of implies that, you know, there's been some invention going on.
Someone at some point might have made something up.
Yes.
That's all we know for sure.
And that's what you found out. And that brings us to the third strand.
Triple meaning. We'd often do double meanings on this podcast, but this is now a triple meaning.
Which is you dobbing him right in.
Absolutely. Snitching.
Allegedly. Alleging him right in.
I allegedly have been on this podcast, dobbing someone in.
So, and it's likely that Hipsley was told a tall tale himself. So that's potentially four. I think this is another four.
A four?
I'm concerned.
We could be staring at four fours here. We could be looking at four fours.
A four fours.
Okay.
Depends what this final category is. Yeah.
Well, that puts a lot of pressure on my final category. And I think I might have blown this because it's a good one.
Mm.
My final category is number of ports.
What do we got again?
I, I, un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq. We've got, of course, the ports of Hastings, New Romney, Hythe, Dover, and Sandwich.
I mean, it's obviously going to have to be a five, but this feels like a sad five, yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed now. Yeah, I don't feel like, it doesn't feel like a victory. I want a four.
Maybe you should have gone with ports in Kent.
Yeah, are there four of those?
I don't know. I don't know where.
Neither do I.
I famously don't know where almost any place is.
But okay, all right. It's a five, but what if like one of the ports sank? How many would be left, James?
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. Can we do it?
Yeah, all right then. Okay, you've got a 4-4.
4-4!
You've got the quadruple threat. You've one up to Tiny Tim.
Well, I don't really know why I took myself out of a five there, but we did it, James.
Yeah, I think it just feels nicer.
It's just nicer. Mm. It is just nicer. Mm. Well, that was the story of the enigma of the panelled room in Tiny Tim's tea rooms.
TTT. And God bless us, everyone, even the ghosts, even the mummified kid children ghosts.
That's one of the weird things about Canterbury.
Mm.
You would think it would be all Canterbury Tales.
Yes.
Very blue. There's a few places that are, but most of the places seem to be Charles Dickens themed, even though from an outside point of view, he's not particularly associated with Canterbury. But try telling that to Canterbury.
He's not from Canterbury, is he? Is he from Portsmouth or somewhere?
No, he's not from Canterbury. I think he spent some time there and set some of his books there. It's the same in Rochester, which doesn't even have Geoffrey Chaucer. Rochester is obsessed with Charles Dickens. Oh. Every second shop is Charles Dickens themed. But you'd think Canterbury, you've got Chaucer. You could have the wife of Bath's rooms.
Yes.
That's just one example.
That is just
Chaucerian
one example.
Chaucerian shop you could have.
Just going to quickly Google Canterbury Tales.
I've really peaked, I think, with the wife of Bath's rooms.
Yes, I think so.
If you were a grocer's that only sold parsnips.
Yes.
You could be the parsnip's tale.
Parsnip's tale, yeah.
Yep, that works. But you do have to be a grocer that only sells parsnips.
The fish and chip shop would be the Friar's Tale.
Yes, you did it, James. That one's actually good. They should have that.
And I guess a hearing aid shop called the Pardoner's Tale.
Yeah. Someone should start these businesses. Those are really good ideas. So there you have it, James. I think you'll agree, a roller coaster / thrill ride. I will now sell you a photograph of yourself looking foolish.
Thanks.
James, it's all kicking off in the Discord. The law folk have started to organise themselves.
Huh?
One of the law folk, Fenissa, has organised a secret Christmas pig.
It is only a number of days until Christmas pig, and it's this very special Christmas pig this year, Alistair.
What?
It's not only Christmas pig, we haven't got enough time to explain that, but it's also our sixth birthday and the 200th episode.
If you want to understand a thing we're talking about, what can you do?
Join the Patreon at patreon.com/lawmenpod, which will allow you access to the Lawfolk Discord, where every answer is in there. Where every answer is.
Not every single answer.
Yeah, answers may sometimes be questions.
To his credit, the stories are well told, quite humorous, perhaps not meant to be taken as seriously as I have. And if you'd like to hear more of them, you can go on his ghost tour if you want, thecanterburytours.com.
Oh.